Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's guest is a really fun person to talk with. She's completely challenged your norms. She's talked about things that most people would never talk about. And she's taken that into a career and a path going from sort of the lowest lows to being really alive as a serial creator, a well-known entrepreneur of a product that you may have heard of. In fact, you probably have heard of. Poo-pourri, have you heard of that? Of course you have. No, I don't mean those little bags that your grandmother puts in the bathroom. I mean the spray, you know, before you go toilet spray, that one. Yeah, we got the woman behind that on the show. Her name is Susie Batiz, an incredible human being, really more about consciousness, not about making your poo not smell. Susie, welcome to the show.
Hi. Although being conscious kind of is about making your poo not smell, but your inner poo, right?
Your inner poo. That's right. There you go. You're full of, never mind. Have you ever done an interview without a poop joke?
No, I don't think so. Why do you have one?
No, I mean, it's par for the course. You have to make a poop joke. My inner seventh grader is like just crawling around and going, come on, say something, Dave. And I'm using my, you know, semi-enlightened status to hold back on my inner seventh grader. I'll fail, of course, but, you know, just give me time.
Give it to me. I loved when I haven't heard one. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's my inner fear of failure. I'm like, I know there's no possible way to come up with a new poop joke for Susie. It's just not possible. So I'm just going to hold it for a while. See what I did there? I didn't mean to do it.
See, that was a great one. I actually have never heard that. I'll just hold it. That's good. See,
I didn't plan it either. That's the problem. They just come out when you're not. Never mind. I lose.
Exactly. I think you won. That was good.
What you actually do now, though, aside from launching other brands, I mean, Poo-pourri is a big win for you. You have Supernatural, which is a new natural cleaning products company. Thank you. Spraying nasty disinfectants around the planet right now because we're afraid of a virus is only going to destroy soil and water even more quickly. So you can still be clean and maybe not kill all the microbiology all around you. So I am grateful you're doing that.
Preach it.
But really, I want to talk to you today about how you teach people, and you actually do go out and teach them teach them about body intelligence, intuition, flow states, creativity, biohacking consciousness, which is a bit out there for an entrepreneur. So I want to go there because right now so many listeners have reached out to me on social media and they're just like, hey, tell me how to succeed. You know, maybe I am just out of college. Maybe I just lost my job. Or maybe I have a job, but I'm nervous. Like, tell me how to succeed. How did you do it? Because you kind of came from out of nowhere and you had, you know, some rough beginnings and you got to where you are. So I want you to teach people how you did that. And of course, we're going to talk about poop because, well, we have to.
Yeah. So, you know, what happened is I've been in a million businesses. Someday I need to make a list of this. I know at least probably 22 businesses because I always had a job and like a side hustle. I was bankrupt twice. I was bankrupt when I was 19. So I was married, bankrupt, and divorced before I was 20 years old. Tried to kill myself when I was 21, in abusive marriage at 23. I was homeless with two children at 25. And I was bankrupt again my second time when I was 38. So
your life was a shit show.
It was. It was the most epic shit show ever, like the biggest mess you've ever seen. And so I just bottomed out. By the time I was 38 in my second bankruptcy, I was like, I want nothing to do with business. I am literally the worst entrepreneur in the world. I really had made business my enemy. I was like, this is horrible. And so I went on a spiritual sabbatical. Went inside, found happiness inside myself through a series of events. The first one was a hypnotherapist told me I have no meaning in my life. And I said, what are you talking about? I have kids, right? Like, I have meaning. He goes, no. Like, you don't have any sort of, like, spiritual, you know, interest. And I'm like, no, I really don't. I'd given that up many years ago because I was raised super conservative Christian. So I turned my back on that as a rebel many years ago. And it was a book called Man's Search for Meaning. So I read this book and I'm like, huh, So then I'd go through studying, you know, Buddhism and Hinduism, and I was a Kabbalist for a while, wore the red bracelet like Madonna, right? So I started going through all these religions, and I found for the first time in my life happiness within myself. And I was like, this is great. I was sitting at home. I knew what wealth was. I knew it was inside. It was an inside job. And I had no desire for money or external wealth. So all of that, you know, prior to 38 was push, push, grind, grind, like going towards something that I thought was actually going to make me happy and was going to make me whole and complete. And then after the second bankruptcy, when I bottomed out, I was able to really look back and face myself. Now, what I say is what's worse than losing everything you have is realizing you didn't even have a good time doing it, right? So I'm like, I wasn't even having fun. You know, I was compromising. I was overriding. I was trying to get the deals done just out of integrity. I was just doing what you do, you know, what people do in business that they consider regular business moves. And I had no desire for business. And then, of course, the idea for Poo-Pourri comes. And I'll tell you a little bit more about how that manifested, but what happened was I didn't want to be in business, but I knew the idea was so good that I needed to bring it to market. So it was almost like getting pregnant, and, you know, I'm pregnant, and I'm like, I've got to birth this child, and that's what I felt with Poo-Pourri, like I have to bring this into the world. But I had a big difference between, you know, the 6 years prior when I'd filed bankruptcy, as I said, because I knew that you can lose everything at any moment. And some of you may be experiencing that right now. You feel like you're at the biggest bottom that you have. What I knew is that if I can lose everything, then I'm only going to do what turns me on and lights me up. Because at least if the rug gets pulled off underneath me again, I can look back and say I had a great time, right?
I have to ask you a question here.
Okay.
I believe in what you're saying. I mean, you and I have hung out with Joe Polish, and I've done Dan Sullivan's classes. You know, they've both been guests on the show. And I said, all right, I'm only going to do what brings me joy, right? Because you only live once, right? And so what that meant was giving myself permission to ask for help doing stuff I don't like to do versus like, I'm just going to chop wood and carry water, which is what all those Zen teachers, which I talked to in, in Tibet when I was going there to learn all that stuff. I'm like, you know, maybe if I had chopped wood and carried water, I could do something else that was more meaningful to me and maybe to the world, right? And maybe it's all my ego in there and like, oh, I'm just too good to chop water. Or maybe it's just like I wanted to record this interview more than I wanted to chop wood, right? And like, I still struggle with that. But my son, who was 9 or maybe 8 at the time, he goes, Daddy, I don't want to empty the dishwasher. I go, well, you don't have a choice about that because that's your job. And he goes, but it doesn't bring me joy.
I'm
like,
love
oh, him. You little, okay. So I'm going to take it from his perspective here with what you just said. And I'm going to put on my hat of someone who doesn't have a job because there's 30 million unemployed people right now who weren't unemployed a little while ago. Or someone who's like, yeah, right. You know, don't do things you don't enjoy. Like, sorry, I got to put food on the table. How did you reconcile those? Because like you've been bankrupt multiple times. Like you've dealt with abuse. Like you've dealt with all kinds of stuff. So you're the go-to expert on this. How do you reconcile what you just said with what you have lived?
Yeah. And I love that question. Basically, what I would say is put food on the table. And then when you get home and you have a couple hours at night, look for that job that's going to turn you on. Okay, realize that that's not the permanent place you're going to be. I think, first of all, we think I'm going to be stuck in this job forever and I'm going to have to do this forever. And I don't believe that. I believe that you should. I mean, we have to be responsible, right? We have to keep children alive. We have to keep ourselves alive. So let's do that. But always be looking for, realize like I am doing this for a reason. And that actually turns me on. Actually paying my bills and having a roof over my head turns me on more than living out in the street, right? Let's get real. And your son, Alan, may have said, and you may have said, well, if you don't, you're going to be punished or, you know, whatever that.
Oh, I just told him that we had other chores that we could do. One of his favorite chores is shoveling out the pig shelter because, yes, we live on a small farm. And magically, he liked the dishwasher when he realized that there was a shortage.
This is what I'm saying. So that's it, is realizing that, you know, like I have a business and sometimes I don't want to show up. But the greater joy that I have is showing up and being responsible for the people that I've made a commitment to, even though at the moment it may not just super light me up. So what I do is I put people around me. Now I have that luxury. I can put people around me to do things that I don't particularly love so that I can spend more of my time doing what turns me on. For example, my first hire was a bookkeeper. And I remember someone making fun of me. They're like, what? Like, you don't even have a business yet. And I'm like, I hate it that much. Right? It's like I knew to hire out what I hate so that I can keep doing what I do, which is being creative.
But one of my favorite first hire stories ever came from another entrepreneur named Naomi Whittle, who's been on the show. And when she started her first company like 20 years ago, she hired a nanny. She didn't have kids. She said, I need someone to take care of me so I could run my company. She was like 22 years old or something like that and literally hired a nanny. And I'm like, that is so smart.
So smart. I need a nanny right now.
And so I actually think you were off. And this is, I'm going to get on my little soapbox for entrepreneurs in general, but especially my women friends who are entrepreneurs or early on entrepreneurs. And any entrepreneur, man or woman, has figured this out after 5 years. But the ones who are doing their, you know, their first 100,000 in revenue, you have to look around yourself and say, do I wash my own socks? Right? And if you wash your own socks, you're a bad entrepreneur. You went for a bookkeeper. You need someone to fold your laundry for you first so you can do your own bookkeeping. Like, it's getting okay.
I had
the crap out.
That did that.
You what?
I had a husband that did that.
Okay, fair point. You'd outsource. Good deal. So there's a good piece of advice. Even if you're sitting here going, God, I don't know how I'm going to make ends meet. Look, if you can do something that gets you $20 and for that time, you have to buy that time for $10 by paying someone else to do something, you do that, right?
100%. Yeah.
And I'm happy that you mentioned that, okay, I hired a bookkeeper because it drains your energy. And frankly, what happens, because you've run some sizable companies, are the revenue or the general size of Poopery or number of customers something like to demonstrate the scale of that business for people? How do you talk about scale there without giving away too much?
Yeah, I just say it's, you know, about, well, we've sold, I think, 90, probably 100 million bottles
okay.
right now.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's big, right?
Yeah. We sell a lot of that shit.
And I can tell you, do not blend it into your coffee. Not even one time.
Not a good idea. I have sprayed it in my mouth before, accidentally. I always had these potions everywhere. And one day, I'm on a call, and I spray it. I'm like, it tastes like lemon rind. So don't worry. It's okay. Essential oils. You're not going to die. But it doesn't taste good. I would not recommend it. I would recommend, it goes other places, but not in your mouth.
Okay. Got it. I would have loved to have a video of that. Just the look on your face would have to be priceless.
Oh, I was just like, what is this? At least I know how it tastes now. I'll tell you.
Okay, fair point. And you definitely put your money where your mouth is there. You're like, all right, it's not. Okay, it didn't taste good, but I'm alive. It sounds like that. Okay, what I was going to say. Okay, so you've done 100 million bottles of Poopery, which is so epic. What happens to small companies who don't have good bookkeeping?
Well, I always say, my friend Marie Forleo she calls it everything's figure outable. I've always called it a figure outer muscle. So what I believe is also another thing that I think probably most people know is I haven't had investors and I haven't had any loans. So I've built the company without any debt. But I've done that by being extremely resourceful. So all of my tough times really created what I call the figure outer muscle, where I can get myself out of most any situation with creativity and with creative bookkeeping, but it kind of is. For example, my first Christmas, Dave, like I didn't know, I was selling product. I didn't know how I was going to get through my first holiday season because I didn't have inventory. I didn't have money for inventory because I didn't have any loans or investors. And I basically called my vendors and said, hey, can I get 90 or 120 day terms just during Christmas so that I can, make it through the holidays. And my manufacturer called me back and said, we'll make you a better deal. If you will supply us all the raw goods, we'll build all the materials and we won't charge you until we actually ship. So it was incredible. So it's like I would partner. They're still my manufacturer to this day, my main manufacturer. So I've never left them because of their loyalty to me when I was starting. I had loyalty. So I developed a lot of partnerships, and that helped fund things like, you know, so that I could have a bookkeeper, right? So I could keep business going and growing. But I would definitely hire out what you hate, not what you don't like, but what if it, like, I, no way am I going to sit there. I haven't bounced my checkbook since I was like 15 years old. Like, I am not going to do bookkeeping. Like, there's just no chance that's going to happen.
I'm with you.
So what I would do, though, I hired someone that knew how to do bookkeeping, but they weren't an accountant. So eventually, like every 6 months, I would bring in an accounting firm to do an audit. And I eventually started doing that every quarter. So
with
I
an
was
accounting
like,
firm? That's insane. You don't do an annual audit? You do 4 times a year?
I did, because wow. I just wanted to make sure we were doing everything right, because I don't want to even deal with accounting. It's like, hey, come in and audit us, because I have this, you know, $15 an hour bookkeeper keeping our books. So I put in kind of these bumper guards around so that the company could grow and make it without having an expensive CFO or an accountant. You know, it cracks me up when people are like, you know, 2 years old and they're like, we need a CFO. I'm like, CFO, like, you haven't even, you're not even making a lot of money yet. You know, wait, and there are ways to get around it. So for me, I use my resourcefulness and my creativity to sort of like hack my way through, you know, how to make it.
So that's really cool. You had affordable in-house people, but then you brought in more expensive outside people to sort of monitor and track. Okay.
And I still do this to today.
To this day. That is so interesting.
You know, Supernatural took me 2 years to actually build that brand and to create those products. And I spent like $2 million before I ever launched it. No, it was a lot. Yeah, major investment. I'm not saying it's the smartest thing I've ever done. It is. So the products are incredible. I don't know if I've sent you any. I need to. But oh my gosh. So what I wanted, I use oils differently. I use oils to do a job rather than I use essential oils to smell good. So I had it actually, I worked with a hippie chemist and with a really high-tech lab. So we all got together and I wanted 100% natural products that worked better than chemicals.
So you're so like that, the Breaking Bad of natural products, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And it does. Like our floor cleaner works better than the number one wood floor cleaner. And it has like fur in it. So it conditions the wood as it goes. So I spent a lot of time in formulation. I spent a lot of time with sustainability experts. We have lowest carbon footprint of any cleaning product line. So I did that differently. I really felt the impact of me putting, you know, 100 million plastic bottles into the world. Our family has a karma fund for that. So, you know, that I started a company 15 years ago, you know, Poopery. So when I did it today, I was like, I would do things completely different. I will make sure that I have a responsibility that I didn't know 15 years ago.
Yeah. People are shifting around that. And I'm constantly looking for ways with my companies, but particularly Bulletproof. We took this huge margin cut. And if you're not an entrepreneur or a business person, that means basically I pay more for the stuff that I sell, but I didn't raise my prices. When I switched from palm oil as a source for MCTs to coconut oil, because I wanted sustainability. I didn't want to kill orangutans. And so All of a sudden, I spent 20% more on my product than I did before, but I didn't want to raise the price because it's already a premium product. It's the best out there. But those things are largely invisible. And same thing, you know, when I started out, well, you couldn't get the coconut stuff. I had to bang on a vendor to do that for me. But in your case, like, okay, 15 years ago, like plastic bottles, but Supernatural is still plastic, or are you going for glass?
They're all glass, and they're concentrates. So I'm not shipping water either. So you just pour the concentrate in. They're glass vials that you're all, and it's incredible. So I really spend a lot of time really thinking a lot about the company and how it should look and how it wants to manifest. And those are our values now. You know, as we grow it now into a lifestyle brand, we're growing out of house cleaning into other products. And I'm excited about it. I mean, I love it. It's great. It's, to me, it's a challenge. I'm like, can I create 100% natural product that works better than chemicals? That's just an epic challenge to me. And it took a long time and a lot of money, and I did it. So I feel really proud.
And you did this all with your own funding as well now, because presumably you don't need other funding. Okay.
Yeah, no, I did it with my own. But I only have 4 employees still. We're all direct to consumer. I decided not go into retail. So I've done things quite a bit differently.
And you only have 4 employees. That's incredible.
Sure. Yeah. And it's amazing how lean you can run and still operate a sizable company.
Distributed team?
Yeah.
Okay. So are they in the same city as you or no?
Yeah, they're all in the same city. Okay. But what's exciting about them is they all wear multiple hats. So I've really been looking at that. Even within Poopery, I just blew up my e-com department. And as I blew it up, and you know, we actually have consultants in there, and it's amazing.
So you replaced
amazing.
Your e-commerce department with consultants?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, so you really believe heavily in, you know, kind of piecing it together from external things whenever possible with a core team of kind of glue.
I do. Yeah. And keeping people on track and on board. Sometimes what I notice with Poopery that's different, it's easy to get fat and lazy.
Yep.
You know, it's easy for a company to get fat and all these processes. And I'm a renegade and I'm a rebel, you know, and we have so many processes, everything becomes slow. And I'm always about keeping as many processes as we need, but not too many. So that, for example, we got hit pretty hard with COVID as far as business. We had one of our largest accounts didn't take a multi-million dollar shipment. It really kind of screwed us. And I had just had surgery and I'm laying here and I heard about hand sanitizer and I just call my team and I go, how quickly can we get in the hand sanitizer business? And we were from the idea to being on shelf within 6 weeks and hand sanitizer. And we've sold millions of bottles. And whoever thought you could have Poopery hand sanitizer. But when you're small and nimble and flexible, you can move quickly like that. The big guys can't do that. And that's our advantage is the speed and agility.
Very, very cool. Now, you're in a great position, though. You're like, oh, millions of bottles, no problem. I'll just write a check for that. Now, put on your I just went bankrupt when I was 19 hat, and you want to do the same thing. How would you do it?
Oh, I would be hustling out on the streets, man. I would probably, right now, I would probably put a website up and take pre-orders. I would make it so compelling and so good. Well, let's back that up. First of all, I would not make anything that wasn't epic. Because I will tell everyone here, we need no more things in the world. Unless it is
toasters? We don't need Bluetooth toasters?
No. If it improves our life and it's so much better improvement than what's out there, then go for it. Then if that happens, then you also have a natural marketing system, which is word of mouth. Think about it. People don't tell people about good products. If I went to a restaurant and I said, hey, Dave, you go, how was that restaurant? I go, it's good. You're going to be like, okay, but what if I go, oh my God, it was so great. You're not going to believe the appetizer. You're going to go. So that's what I try to tell entrepreneurs is don't stop at good. Like, make it great. And then when it's great, then I would build a website. I would ask my friends who got it to give testimonials. And I would start almost a pre-order kind of Kickstarter thing myself. You can start a website yourself. That's what I would do these days.
It's so cheap. For $5, you can have a website. And it used to be like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Right. And so everything is cheap to do now. So you're saying anyone, even you, when you were 19, or if you were 19 now, you're saying right, you do a website and start talking about it. And all of that can be self-taught on YouTube videos. Like, you don't have to know what you're doing.
You don't have to know what you're doing. But also, if you don't like figuring stuff out, really question if you want to be an entrepreneur.
Thank you. Okay.
It's like, that's all you're going to do every day, multiple times a day.
Okay. Well, I didn't think we were going to go here. All right. There are so many people who know that being an entrepreneur, it's as cool as being a rock star, right? Okay, so what is your advice for people who aren't sure if they want to be entrepreneurs?
Do you like solving problems? Because that's all you're going to do all the time.
I kind of feel like run screaming might be good advice for that. It's a really hard job unless it's your calling. Am I overstating that?
No, I tell people, okay, here's the deal. When you're on a track team, there are people that like to just run around the track, right? And they're maybe long distance runners. There are people that are hurdlers. That's an entrepreneur. If you like jumping hurdles, then get in the game. If you don't like jumping hurdles, if you complain every time you walk up to one, you're not a hurdler, okay? Get over on the other side of the track and run around for someone else. They'll love you. Team up with an entrepreneur. But that's the thing. If you don't like and if it doesn't turn you on to solve these problems and be in crisis after crisis after crisis, then don't even go there.
Now, a lot of people, especially when they're young, I go back to the way I was when I was 19. I was in crisis after crisis. I didn't even know it. I'm like, there's no crisis. There's no reason for there to be a crisis. Meanwhile, like the voice in my head's like, ah, and, you know, freaking out. And some of that's just, you know, the wisdom of years. You know, you do it enough times and you figure it out. And clearly, you know, it took you a couple tries to figure it out. And me too. You know, this is, I think, my third career or something. But when I look back on that and say, all right, what about all the people who are listening who are like, okay, I'm going to take your advice, or I just don't think I have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. I want to do something else, but they still have this consciousness thing that they're doing. And I want to ask you about that, because you're really clear. Like, look, you need to hack your consciousness. You have to change not just your thinking, but consciousness is deeper than thinking. So my first question for you about this, which is really the core of how you've made your personal transformation, how you've become as successful as you are as a human being, not just financially. What is the difference between consciousness and thinking? And is there one?
Oh, gosh, we're going there?
Well, hey, you're the one who talks about, hey, you got to change your consciousness, you got to hack your consciousness. So you got to tell me what it is if I'm going to hack it.
I don't even know. I don't think anyone knows what consciousness is, right?
Isn't just tell me the difference between it and thinking, right? Because, I mean, isn't it possible to change something beyond how you just think about stuff? Or are they just so integrally tied to you? It's like, look, change how you think about it. You know, be grateful instead of hateful and, you know, go team.
So I would rather say thinking and feeling, rather than thinking and consciousness. So, for example, like I used to believe that everything was strategy. You know, if I had enough strategy, then I can make enough money, right? If I can hustle enough, if I can, like, and I was just talking about hustling, making having problems, but it's different. I'm hustling towards something that actually lights me up and turns me on, not just towards something that I think is going to make me money and give me some end result. What I believe with consciousness is, well, let's go back. So after my bankruptcy, even if I had been successful, I wasn't able to feel the money that I had. I wasn't able to feel wealth. So what my practice is now, like, I feel wealthy. I happen to be financially wealthy now, but I also know where wealth comes from. So that is an internal state of being that I couldn't have created on my own. It was really from me emptying everything out. And then going, oh my gosh, there's a well of bliss and joy and happiness within me. And then over time, Dave, what I started noticing are patterns, and that I've really noticed of how much we programmed ourselves and society's program. So we're like these computer, let's get into the matrix for a second. We're like these computer simulations that are running around in this patterned, programmed life. And then we can actually look at that life and go, hold on, why did I do that three times? I notice this pattern keeps happening. What's wonderful is we can do things like your 40 years of Zen. We can go back in, we can reprogram our subconscious mind, which is actually the birthplace of those original, that bad or old code. Let's call it old code, because it's not bad code, because it was written for survival. But we can actually change that code. And then we can start creating a different reality based on that new change. So it's really programming. So it's I call it biohacking consciousness, but it's actually reprogramming.
Okay. I'm 100% in agreement with everything you just said. And I'm going to put on my doubter hat.
Let's do it.
Okay. I want you to go back to your 19-year-old bankrupt self who was about to get into a really bad relationship with an emotionally abusive person. Did you really reprogram your consciousness, or did you just get the shit kicked out of you so many times that you finally learned?
No, back then I was actually programming myself for a survival state. I was programming myself through my experiences that life is hard and that it never works out.
So that was your story. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you call it story, but it's actually, we're programming that every time with our experiences. So what no one told me is, guess what? You can go in, and there's lots of free things you can do online to, you know, reprogram your subconscious mind. You can do tapping, you know, you can do a million things, whatever turns you on again. But no one ever told me that I could be part of what was creating the problems in my life. You know, I was like a skier going 100 miles an hour down the slope that lost a ski that was tumbling. You know, I was just like, ah! No one said, hold on, you could be creating all of this. I'm like, what? When I figured that out, what I started noticing, I call it being like a detective in my life. What I started noticing is patterns. I'd be like, hold on, that happened three times. Where would that have come from? So then I go back in and I start like reprogramming. like, oh, if it happens three times, it's definitely a pattern. And if it's a pattern, where was that pattern created? And that pattern, just like a programming language, Dave, you know, you program an arm to do this, and when you're writing a video game, that arm will do that to infinity, right?
As far as it'll do it, and the program itself won't know that it's been programmed to do that. It'll just know that's what it always does, and that's that weird thing, right?
Exactly. So when I started noticing our patterns, and let me give you an example of business. I had three COOs. They all screwed me over. One of them had been in prison. Someone forgot to do a background check. One of them, one of them opened a manufacturing plant behind my back, was putting millions of bottles of poopery through it. And so after three, I was like, hold on. Either I am the worst interviewer and, you know, hiring person on the planet, or there's some goggles that I'm looking through that I am creating this. So I went through, I did a lot of work. One of my first memories was cooking for my parents at 4 years old. My dad was a bipolar alcoholic. My mom was on pain pills. So guess what I had a story of? That I'm not supported.
And you have to do it all yourself, right?
I have to do it all myself. So I am, through this program and through these goggles, I am hiring these people that are perfectly giving the experience that helps put that program back in and affirms it, like, oh yeah, see, Susie comes in, she has to save the day, this is what she does all the time. So I do a lot of internal work, EMDR, hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and now I have Boyd. Boyd is my senior VP of ops. He's been there for about 3 years. Boyd and I have tears with each other, like how much he's taught me about security. He had interviewed with me for 2 years prior, Dave, and I went, Boyd is so boring. Like, I cannot have Boyd in my building. And Boyd now has taught me about support. But the reason I can appreciate Boyd is because of the internal reprogramming that I did. And now I know I can be supported. So what I do is I say that our external world is reflected by our internal world. If I want to know how my life's going, I just need to look around.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
All right. You figured out that you had this programming. And just in the interest of, you know, sharing with people listening, some our age, some older, some younger, you know, one of mine was kind of similar. It was that no one wants to help you. Like you're going to have to do it all yourself. And, you know, I got that just being raised to be strong and independent and whatever else. And so that meant like my freshman year in college when I was doing, or it was my sophomore year, I was doing that t-shirt kind of thing. There were guys running $50 and $100 million companies who had come into my dorm because I signed up to be in the little entrepreneurial interest area. And they're like, I want to help. And I would hear that like, no, they don't want help. They just want something. And literally I had access to like this incredible array of people who would have just helped me. They would have written me checks to fund something. Like they just wanted to help someone younger because they had to go through all that crap. But I was entirely not open to that stuff. And it took me like another 10 years to go, wait a minute, like people actually want you to succeed? And so it took me a long time and lots of failure and angst and all to realize that. And I mean, I could talk some other time about how I realized that. What I want to know is, you realized at some point that you had to do that. So in order to create the change, you got to know there's a problem. Did you hire a therapist? Did you do ayahuasca? You talk about EMDR, which is done by a therapist. I mean, did you, you know, go fast in a cave on a submarine? I don't know. Like, what was your path? How did you just wake up one day and be like, oh my God, I have all these beliefs that are totally not working?
All of the above. So the first thing I did is there was a book by Byron Katie called Loving What Is.
Oh, great. And she's been on, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So within 2 weeks, I was in her 10-day workshop, and I didn't have the money to do it. I begged them to finance it, and I put a little bit on a credit because I just filed bankruptcy. And I went in drinking a double, bottle of Yellowtail Chardonnay a night. And I know. And I came out of there 10 days later and was completely sober for 10 years. And I mean, I'm sober again. I don't have a drinking problem. What I had was a thinking problem, right? I had a lot of beliefs that were, that's when I started realizing that my beliefs were creating my suffering. So that was the first aha, right? It was like, hold on.
Very, very Zen. Okay.
Yeah. So I was in her camp for about 4 years. So I was at every workshop. I was, volunteering. And really, that's when I really developed this kind of enlightened state of just being at home, crying, being, totally happy. I knew where wealth came from. I was wealthy and I had no money. So I wrote a course called Inside Out, How to Create a Life You Desire by Going Within. I had 5 women in the course. No one finished it. And I had the aha, I haven't created money. Like, that's what they think wealth is, right? So I just put that course back out. I have 150 people going through it right now.
And do you teach it personally? Like, I didn't even know.
I do.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's called Alive OS, for Alive Operating System. So I renamed it. But what happened was I started realizing that my beliefs were part of my suffering. And then I just started noticing that. Now, through my journeys, I've done somatic therapy for probably 20 years. I've drank ayahuasca over 100 times. I've done 5-MeO. I've done tons of MDMA psilocybin journeys.
At a certain point, do you ever think it might not be working if you had to do it 100 times?
Look at my life. Something's
okay.
Working.
So something's working. I was like, wow, 100 is getting up there. Like, there's a few people who've been on the show who've done about that number, but that tends to be at the very high end. Okay. But it's you're like, why argue with success there? Okay.
And my first 35 ceremonies were brutal. I mean, getting my ass kicked. And my husband at the time, kept going, why do you keep doing this? And each time I felt like a big chunk was taken off of me, right? I kept feeling more and more of myself. So I've done it all. I've done hypnotherapy. And I tell people, do everything. Do anything and everything you can, because your programs are deep and they're old. And then this is just not even just this life and our life experiences. Think about generational programming. Think about societal programming. We have a lot of programming. I'm a fan of The Matrix, so I totally believe.
Oh, me too. This.
Yeah. So I live my life literally like that, going, oh, that's interesting that happened. And if it happens a few times, I go, I don't want that. So if I don't want that, I need to just look what the source code is. I go back, I shift that source code, and then I can create something different. And it happens every time.
And the way you're shifting the source code now, as opposed to all the things you've done before. So let's say there's a glitch in the matrix, a cat walks through and you have deja vu 3 times right here on the podcast.
Right.
Okay. What is the first thing you do?
The first thing I do is go back to, why would I be creating that? I get curious.
Okay, so you'd sit down. Do you journal, or do you have like a special chair, or do you like spin around on a merry-go-round? Like, what's your process?
Stand on my head and twirl. No, I sit and I get curious and I say, like, huh, why would I have created that? What belief would I have had to have had in order to create that? And I go with the first thing that pops in. I trust whatever comes okay. through.
So this is a very Byron Katie sort of lineage of process. Okay. And if I can offer to listeners what you just said there, the first thought that pops into your head, it's always right, even if it's the most batshit crazy thing ever. And I see this over and over when I'm doing neurofeedback with people at 40 years. They're like, oh yeah, I'm working on this thing I do in the boardroom or whatever. And all of a sudden I thought about this thing I haven't thought of since first grade when little Johnny was mean to me. I'm like, we're going to go do that. Like, what are you talking about?
Yes.
It's always the first thing. And it's usually so stupid.
I know. It's so stupid.
What is the dumbest thing that's ever popped in your head that was right?
Probably, I remember the story of this little boy. I was working on relationship because, I've been trying that thing. I can say there are patterns where I have not been successful, Dave.
Trying that thing.
Trying that, you know, relationship thing. That's still a process. That's my current reprogramming. But I was doing hypnotherapy, and I remembered this little boy in second grade asked me to be his girlfriend. And I was so excited. Remember, my nickname was Dog Barker. And I was so excited because he was the cool kid in second grade. And then an hour later, he told the whole classroom it was a joke.
Aw. That's so mean.
But it's so stupid. It's like it was an hour of my life.
Have you ever like tracked him down now and had like a garbage truck dump stuff on his lawn just out of nowhere? Just
no, but that's a great idea. I don't know if I
that's so dark. And I know revenge is bad, but come on, you have to have thought of it once.
But come on, that feels good. But to think there's something that really is benign that all kids do.
It was a dumb, a second grader, right? But man, it hurt, okay? And that was still sticking with you how many years later? This is like 40 years later or something, right?
Oh, yeah, 40. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Decades later.
48. Yeah, decades later, it's still here. But that's what's so crazy. It's like I didn't even remember that event happening until I went into hypnotherapy. So I just go with the first thing that pops in.
All right. I think I'm ready to disclose something I've never talked about on the show because it's so in alignment with that, and you'll laugh.
Okay.
So going back, I don't know, 5-6 years, Bulletproof was still really young, and you know, it was a vulnerable brand. You know, you're just making a noise for it. A very famous and powerful podcaster who you may have heard of called Joe Rogan. Okay. I go on his show. I actually had never heard his podcast because I actually read like medical research for fun. I'm not cool, even though people think I'm cool. So I go on and he's like this, some kind of like UFC guy, and he makes dick jokes. And like, that's all I know. And I'm like, hey, here's what coffee does. And it totally changes his brain. He's just like raves about it. And his followers are like, yeah, go Dave. And I'm like, whoa, I kind of feel like I'm the cool kid now. And then one of his buddies decides he's going to knock off my brand, like literally tries to take the name and the company he's invested in. Like they try to say I didn't create Bulletproof Coffee and like all kinds of smear campaigns, like made up stuff they never published. And I saved all the emails. I never published it. So anyway, it really messed with the way I was reacting with my team. I got really reactive and I was like, what is going on with me? And Zach, my first marketing guy, was like, Dave, like something's weird. You need to go work on this. So I put electrodes on my head. You know, I do the neurofeedback thing. And the first thing that pops into my head was from, just like you, for me, it was first grade. And I was like, some kid was peeing on the wall in the bathroom. And I was like, teacher, little Johnny's, you know, peeing on the wall and you shouldn't do that. I think that's wrong. And he comes out and goes, oh, no, I didn't do it. Dave did it. And I got punished for it. Right. And I had forgotten this. I had no idea this happened to me, but I was sitting there, you know, going into altered states. And this popped into my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting blamed when I was helping. And what I did is I went on the Rogan show and I helped his audience do stuff that worked. And there was no badness. There was no selling. There was nothing I did that was justifying the way I was being treated. And it was that sense of injustice triggered whatever emotions I had in first grade. So I whacked that mole with neurofeedback. And then I looked at the numbers. I'm like, wait, every time Joe Rogan says Dave Asprey's a bad man, I sell more coffee. So like in reality, like bring it on, like say my name, brother, say my name. But in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm dying. Oh, it's unfair. And like, that was just bad programming. So you made me think of that. I haven't thought of that in a couple of years, but it's this old shit from our childhood, right?
I know, man.
So and I've never talked about that. And you made me think of it because that's so irrelevant. Like who cares that little Johnny peed on the wall, right?
Well, who cares? But what I theorize, and we'll see, is that you actually create that reality so that you can go back in there and reprogram that. Or that was actually created. Joe, you know, you created Joe to say that so that you could actually see that. This is where it gets very matrixy. And
yeah, it's a lesson you need to learn. You know what I do now to avoid that? Is I just spray poopery before an interview, and nothing bad ever happens. It's great.
Genius. That's the way it works, yes.
Okay, so you get pretty deep. I mean, you've studied Kabbalah. You know, you've done all the stuff. And people know that. I've done shamanic training, and I've talked about using different hallucinogens and, you know, the ancient Tibetan traditions and, you know, Chinese medicine and all. So I'll go there. I'm scientific, but, like, hey, you got to be curious if you're scientific. How do you practice discretion and judgment before you kick open a door?
Well, I wish I could tell you I do.
Girl, screw that discretion. Okay.
That would be nice. Well, my goal is to reach my highest evolution within this lifetime, and I don't know what that is. So I want to continue growing and learning. So I am okay with the hard path. So if
why,
I
why
feel
are you
compelled
limiting it
to
that
something.
Way?
Limiting what?
My highest evolution within this lifetime. Why don't you screw that? Like cut off that within this lifetime. Just be like ASAP.
You're so smart.
Or like right now. I'm not even kidding.
You're a genius.
Oh, well, thank you. No, seriously.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's my goal. Scalable, enlightened for everyone right now.
Right.
That includes
now.
Me, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, God. That's the biggest gift.
You're
thank
being so
you.
Patient. Like, come on.
I'm way too patient. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what have I been doing?
In all seriousness, I hear that. I'm like, oh, this is one of the things that's going to be hard.
My new guru. Yeah. I'm going to build a shrine of you after this, okay? It's going to have a Dave Asprey show. Well, okay, we won't.
We can do an excerpt. But it's like, I was just that just popped into my mind, like little Johnny from first grade. But the idea there it is that, okay, so you're working on it, but you're willing to take the risks, right? Of just saying, all right, I'm going to kick open the door because like I was called to kick open the door and that's how it is, right?
I was called to kick open the door. Yeah. And I know that my life has improved every single time. And what I do is I work like a shaman on many levels. So while this spiritual world is going crazy over here and I'm dealing with real with you know a lot of energy stuff, I also am very practical in the material world. So for example, that, you know, there were potential lawsuits, there were everything, they had no case. It was really just energetic. But I had a team of attorneys that was working on this material plane to kind of spot everything and hold everything in place while I was doing the energetic clearing. And then once I cleared energetically, of course, those people just vanished and dropped everything, which is the way it happens.
Let me ask you,
Dave. Oh, we're in the Matrix.
Of course, we're in the Matrix.
We're in one big ayahuasca ceremony, dude.
I always laugh at. And I have some very good friends who are high up in the. We're going to upload ourselves to the internet, and my answer over drinks is usually, "Haven't you figured out that we're already uploaded to the internet?" So it's a lot easier to hack that under those circumstances than it's like I'll create a virtual machine and then upload myself into a virtual machine inside the internet. But that
you're
that,
like too late.
Yeah, exactly. Like should have looked earlier. Okay.
There's something I want to. So this caffeine T-shirt, that was a premonition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. It said caffeine, my drug of choice. It was a picture of the molecule of caffeine, trimethylxanthine. And to do this, I reached out over Usenet to a professor of caffeine chemistry somewhere on the East Coast, and I sent him a little note in a green screen text because we didn't really have many color monitors back then. And it was like, hey, you know, could I make a spray caffeine that would go sublingually? And he's like, no, it doesn't concentrate enough. And I got to know him and asked him questions to make the thing. And that was literally the birth of the first product over the internet.
Really impressive. I didn't know that.
And you know what it was? I needed to pay my tuition and it went up something like 1500% or 900% or some sort of like many multiples while I was in college. I'm like, I can't afford this. I'm scrappy. So I did that. And,
and there you go. And here you are.
Well, there I go. But
still the caffeine king.
But do you know how dumb I was? Okay. This was like the first e-commerce company. And then I get national media. I was in like 80 magazines when I was 23. Over, hey, this kid is selling something over the inner something. And I was in the Miami Herald, and then it gets in like all these things. And I'm like this puffy red-faced kid, you know, with glasses and size 46-inch pants. And yeah, all this happened. What did you? I didn't ask for help. I didn't go, hey, guys, could somebody help me? Does anyone want to like give me $1 million and teach me how to grow Amazon? No, I didn't do that. What did I do? I was like, this happened. I am so tired of putting T-shirts in these envelopes and taking them to the post office. I'm shutting down my sales. That's what I did.
Well, it's worked out for you.
I know, but like, I was such a dumbass because of my internal programming. Anyway, that's the whole reason I'm telling you that. It's like, you can just like, you can see it or you can not see it.
It's like your son. I don't want to do the dishes anymore. I don't like it. I want to slop out the pigs. Pig slop.
I want to go back to advice for people who are freaking out from the pandemic. And I want to go there. What is the change of the pandemic done for you? Like what's been the personal effect on you? So that, you know, I think that's going to provide a little bit of a flashlight for how other people can look at it.
Well, it's really provided me the space that I needed to really go inside and reflect. And if I could whirl this camera around, I would show you my walls right now are covered with probably 20 of the large post-it notes and just everything written on it.
Do you have like those red yarn things like crazy people have connecting all the dots?
No, but that would be fun. So I have things like I'm not interested, I am interested in. Like I'm just not interested in being the one that pushes anymore.
Oh, you're making lists, like with the big stick-on post-its?
Oh, yeah. I have list after list after list, and I've really gone through. I've never spent time for desires. Like, Dave, I don't want anything. I don't even think about wanting anything. I just create such an amazing life. My life gets better. I'm like, why would I even put a desire out there? But also, I've never just sat down and went, what do I really want? So I've done that. So it's provided me the space to really get clear about what I'm interested in. The stuff you can't buy, like what's my internal, what do I want to do? You know, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? So it's really created this internal shift in me when I'm not interested in doing that anymore. Now I'm interested in doing this. For example, I don't know when I'm going home. I've been gone for 3 months. I've been in LA camping out and in an amazing spot. And I don't know when I'm going to go back home. What I've realized is I can run my companies remote.
Wow.
So I've really done an internal assessment. Like there's a rebel inside of me that has not had a life right now. She's been I know we've had 100 ayahuasca ceremonies and all that, but trust me, there's still more of a rebel in here. And I'm like, I don't want to go home. I don't want to do this. I want to travel all over the world. So when it opens up, I'm going to Morocco, I'm going to Greece, like who knows where I'm going. But what I've decided is that it gave me the space to do that, to actually dream and go, why am I waiting for my soulmate to go travel and go do what I want to do? I don't have to be in my company every day. Here I am. So
wow. I've been doing. So reflection has been the gift for you.
Reflection and going, what do I want to prioritize? I mean, if we really could all die, you know, at the beginning, everybody's like, we're all going to die. You know, I don't believe that, but we could have. And it's like, okay, if that's true, then what am I going to spend my time and energy doing for the rest of my life? If we can just be wiped out from a virus, I mean, hell, we need to really think about what we're doing.
I went on this trip for the past, I don't know, 5 years. I interviewed a whole bunch of people and asked them a question for Game Changer, like statistically analyze what, you know, gurus and people do. And Jay Abraham, are you familiar with Jay Abraham's work?
Yeah.
He's spoken at Joe Polish's things and Jay's a dear friend. He just was on the show. We released his show last week for the second or third time. And he's talking about how do you do well during the pandemic and create opportunities and things. But I wrote about him in my book, Game Changers, because he's saying, look, every time I've bought a really nice car, I was happy about it for like 48 hours or something. And then it's like, well, what's next? And that idea of like constantly on the treadmill. We talk about like getting what you want. But almost everything you talked about wanting was not a possession. Almost everything you talked about wanting was, you know, I want, you know, healthy relationships. I want, you know, a sense of freedom. When did you shift your wants from physical desires to like, I want enlightenment or, you know, the furthest evolution of this life or like most people don't have those kinds of goals. Did you do that when you were young? Were you born that way? Did you decide it when you were 30? Like how did you shift that?
Well, I think it was because after my second bankruptcy, when I realized that everything, I really became detached from a lot of material possessions. And I'll tell you right now, Dave, I say it all the time. Like right now, if, you know, I had my backpack and had to walk out of here, like I'm going to be good. Like I can tell you that. Like my being, my person that I am, I'm going to be great and I'm going to be fine. And that doesn't scare me. So I believe that it was that work that really shifted, because before that it was only material. Like I need to make money and I need to make it in the world. So I was completely opposite. Then I became, of course, in Byron Katie, the non-duality, I became super detached from I don't need anything, which is not necessarily grounded. So now I found this balance, like a shaman does, of living in both worlds. Is I'm not attached and wow, this is cool.
What a beautiful way of explaining it. Because there's this, like if you think of your yoga teacher who can't show up to yoga class on time, you're like, well, you know a lot, but like there's a problem if you're over there. And then you like talk to like the engineering guy who more like me, like I am a meat robot. And like, that's probably not where you want to be either. And somehow you end up being in the middle where you can both do yoga and think and do that. And And for me, that's been a big part of my spiritual evolution and all. And what I'm hearing from you is you went from that, and I was also one of those, like, if I don't have money, I won't be safe. And you went from that as well. And along the way, you did the Byron Katie thing. You went too far on the land of the lotus eaters. And then you went, but after that, did you go too far on the mechanistic side, or were you already there? You just kind of balanced out in the middle.
Yeah, what I realized is what I was doing literally. So I started going down to Peru. I drank ayahuasca 15 years ago. So what I would do is well, 14 years ago, I started my business and I would leave it for 2 weeks and go down to the jungle. So I'm in business world. I would go down to the jungle for 10 days, you know, for 2 weeks, no cell phone, no Wi-Fi. I'd leave my business. I'd come back, tell them about this spiritual awakening that I had. You know, it's amazing. And I remember I was literally bouncing back and forth all the time. I'd be like, okay, work mode, grind. You know, oh, now I'm, you know, puking and doing ayahuasca. And I remember the day I was sitting at my desk and some big scary thing happened in business. You can fill in the blank. I don't even remember it now, but at the time it was a big deal. Like someone knocked you off, right? And you're like, ah! And I remember sitting at my desk and I was like, I'm in ceremony. And what I realized is there is no difference in being in an ayahuasca ceremony than there is in life, that I'm always in ceremony. So that's when the worlds all started merging. And that's the reason I can say this right now is I'm always in ceremony. My experiences are ceremony.
So professional shamans, and I don't mean the ones who like took, you know, ones who took some ayahuasca twice and then hung up a shaman sign. No offense if you're one of those. I thank you for your work. But the guys from the jungle who like, oh yeah, I take ayahuasca every day and I have for the last 10 years. And I'm always a little bit in that world and I'm in this world. And by the way, you know, there's a seven headed, you know, lizard creature in your aura or whatever. I'm like, whatever. The problem is when there's two of them who don't know each other, who both say the same thing and aren't in the same room when they say it, you're like, oh dude, this is so messy.
I don't even, there is a two headed lizard thing
or
behind me.
Or like there's a shared hallucination from these dudes. I don't know what's going on, but like, I'll just say I've learned the world is pretty darn crazy. It's just more interesting than we think it is. And it doesn't mean I have to know it or accept that it's always that way, but just that there's stuff I don't see that other people seem to be able to see. You have the same experience?
Oh, 100%.
But you're saying you're always doing that. So if you took 100 of these, you know, 100 ceremonies like that, I mean, you're kind of far along on that. So, I mean, do you see weird, curly creatures and glowing auras and stuff like that? Some people do, some people don't. By the way, I know what brainwaves that people can see that look like. There are people who can do that. That's the joy of running 40 years of Zen. We can spot that. Are you one of those?
I'm not as much visual, and I'm definitely a feeler.
So you
like
feel
I can,
it.
Oh, 100%.
Like this person's icky, and you just know.
Well, I can just feel, yeah, like, oh, they've got some trauma. You know, they're going through stuff, and they'll be like, everything's great. I'm like, no, it's not good. Like, I can feel
so
it.
So why doesn't that work for COOs and boyfriends?
Well, because of the programming.
Okay. I knew you were going to say that. Okay. And so you're working on that program.
This is a stick I'm on right now. You know, I thought I was going to be a shaman, as everybody that travels down to Peru does. You know, I'm like, I need to be a shaman. What am I doing? What am I doing in business? But I do want to say this. So the master shaman I was with, I went down and said, what am I doing in business? This is crazy. I need to be a shaman. And he said something so profound. He said, shamans move energy. And money is energy. That's all it is. Business is the biggest way to move money, which you're moving energy. You're going to serve the world a lot better being in business than you are down here pouring ayahuasca to 20 people at a time.
A business with a mission is shamanic, and a business whose job is just to make money is probably evil.
Still shamanic.
Doesn't mean they have to be. They could be neutral, but they'll probably end up evil. Because if that's your goal, that's the emergent behavior. It's like, oh, I'll just take stuff, right? Rather than to, you know, create and give back. Okay, that's interesting though, your perspective. So you thought you'd be a shaman. I know I did my first experience with plant medicine was, I think, 2001 in Peru as well. Way before ayahuasca was cool, but you were one of those as well. Like, was there someone at the airport holding up a sign that says ayahuasca for white people? I am of the mindset that you can use plant medicine to kick the door open, but you still have to step through it, just like we talked about earlier.
Well, that's the thing. So I've journeyed with a lot of people over the years that have, you know, journeyed with me, and their lives have not changed, but I also come back and do the work.
So I integrate. I don't believe plant medicines by themselves. I believe they show you. They kick the door open, but you have to come back and actually do the integration work, do the real life work, like the amends. Just because you've done the thing you need to apologize for, you've seen it in ayahuasca, I don't believe actually shifts the energy. I believe it's when you come back and actually have that conversation. So I've had conversations where I literally puke in a bucket having that I never wanted to tell anyone. Those things, the more courageous you can get that way, the bigger you reprogram.
Okay. This is going to be the most evil question ever, but should I spray poopery in the bucket before I throw up in it?
100%. Why would you want to smell that shit?
I never thought of that before, but that is actually a really good idea.
Okay. A great idea. That would have been great in college, right?
Listen to you. I knew that this would be a fantastic, fun interview because there's no question you won't answer it because you have a good sense of humor. And because you've lived through a lot of crap and it seems like you've done so much work on yourself to get to level of success where you are that, you know, you own your space. And I just, when we first sat down, when we first met at Joe's thing, I'm like, oh, like you've got a good vibe. You've sat with your stuff enough and you've talked about a bunch of the stuff, EMDR. Clearly you're on the plant medicine path and, you know, you've done a bunch of other healing work.
I still need to come do the 40 years of Zen. I haven't done that yet.
We are opening again after this COVID stuff. It looks like we should be open in middle of June. We're booking like crazy. Everyone on earth wants to go right now. So anytime you're ready, Susie, it's there. It'll help you to integrate the little details, even from the ayahuasca stuff. And we'll actually show you what it did to your brain too. Like, we'll be like, oh, look, you have these brain waves that most people don't have unless they've done a lot of work and all that. It's pretty neat. So to know the advanced
states. It's been on my bucket list. So I need to come do that. And I'm not going home in the near future. So I may come up there next.
It's only 5 days. All you have to do is find a way to get to Seattle. Hopefully there'll be some flights open soon. Well, there are some.
And is it 5 days of like totally tapped out? Like no.
I mean, it's possible in the evening you could text a friend or something. But thinking about you're running, it's like if you're in the middle of an ayahuasca ceremony, you're not going to step out. You're going to be really tired. You've done maximum personal development that you're capable of every day for 5 days. And we have a computer showing you, oh no, you missed one.
Oh, that's so good. I want to do that. I just did 5 ketamine journeys with a medical researcher out of San Francisco. I was pioneering these telesessions. He had me at the word pioneer, right? I'm like, he's like, do you want to pioneer these telesessions? I'm like, yes, I do.
A telesession. That's smart. I did one, an injected one for a show on depression and ketamine when I was down in San Diego. That was I actually shot video and then recorded an interview. And yeah, ketamine could be I actually called the forgiveness drug. It was really easy to let go of old stuff. I forgave all my high school girlfriends or lack thereof. Susie, I appreciate your work in the world. I love your just radical honesty as an entrepreneur. Like, yeah, I deal with my own stuff. And you're continuously working on it. And at the same time, you're radically successful. And I think you serve as a model for how anyone, no matter how much success or lack thereof they've had in their life, can, you know, get their stuff together and go out and do something really big and something that matters, you know, and you're doing that with both of your companies. And I think it's admirable and it's awesome. And I hope it's inspiring for people who listen. And thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for such a fun conversation and enlightened. I didn't know you were that deep.
I try to hide it. It gets out sometimes. Too much coffee. It's a big problem. Your website is suzybatiz.com. SUZYBATIZ. And I'm sure you guys can Google poopery or supernatural cleaning and you'll find her all over the place because she's kind of a big deal. Thanks for the episode. If you like today's episode, you know what to do. All you've got to do is go out there and buy something that supports the world you want to live in. And the reason you got to do that right now is because there's this whole pandemic and there's 30 million people without jobs and stuff like that. Support a local business. And yeah, if you're living with roommates, you might want to get some poopery. But that is not why Susie did this interview to sell more poopery. I promise you that. But support businesses that do good stuff because you're supporting jobs right now. Order from a local restaurant. And let me give you a little hint. Call the restaurant on their phone number and order with your credit card, and they'll get twice as much money as if you use the app on your phone. So if you want the restaurant you love to stay in business, give the money to the restaurant. It's really important. And I say that because I own a restaurant, and it really matters. Like, this is a matter of jobs or no jobs. Yeah, it matters.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.